Welcome to the Western Bowhunter Podcast with your host, South Cox of Stalker Stick Bows.
Good morning. Welcome back to the Western Bowhunter Podcast. This is South Cox. I don't normally greet you guys like this, but it is 20 minutes to 1 in the morning, and this is not a time of day when I'm usually vertical. I have been absolutely getting my butt kicked, getting back from Australia, and adjusting to the time change, jet lag, etc. My wife, I think, has turned into a vampire also. I went to bed at about, 9:30 and woke up at 11:30 and wide awake. Did the same thing last night, was awake for 3 hours in the middle of the night. And it's not done too well for the sleep habits, let me tell you. Had a fantastic time down there in Australia, and my wife and I both did. Had a great time at the show. I wanted to thank everybody from Australia who may be listening today. And man, you guys just made us so welcome, and we had such a great time. Had the most successful show from a sales standpoint, so I appreciate the support, all you guys coming out, and the guys that bought themselves a new bow or ordered themselves one. Had a lot of fun, and looking forward to coming down there again, whether it be in a couple years or whether we hit it in 4 years again like we did this last time. It's not going to be soon enough, I can tell you that. And we got quite a number of hunt invitations, so we may end up going down there ahead of that for a hunt. My employees are very excited with that potential there. It sounds like a great adventure. So definitely looking forward to that. Stalker news of getting back into the swing of things here, getting fired back up again. My new employee, Jacob, started yesterday. Now that it is Tuesday now, just past the stroke of midnight. And so he's starting in the office, and he'll be working his way out towards the shop here eventually once we get some of the stuff caught up in the office that he is starting on. So really excited about that. Increased production level, more time for me to be working hands-on with the actual building, and a little less of the office duty stuff, which is always one of those things I dread. I hate paperwork. But so today we have from Never Sniff a Gift Fish, one of my favorites, and I did not pre-read this one. I just remember this one I enjoyed so much when I was back in high school that I remembered it, and so I didn't pre-read it, so this one may take a little while on the editing standpoint. This one is called Poof No Eyebrows, and I wanted to apologize in advance if my voice sounds a little bit off. I got sick right as I was leaving for Australia. I just burned the candle at both ends for a little too long, and I started getting a scratchy throat, which morphed into a full-blown cold, and I ended up losing my voice on the second day of the show. It was pretty funny. All I could do was squeak, and I was supposed to record a couple of podcasts with some guys down there in Australia at the show. And of course I couldn't speak on Sunday. So that made talking to people really challenging. And of course no podcast got recorded, but this one, like it alluded to earlier, one of my favorites. If you had much of a long leash when you were younger and played around with flammable materials, you'll definitely appreciate this one. I had my share of taking apart firecrackers and igniting the gunpowder, blowing up firecrackers and M80s, and then experimenting around with the flammability differences between kerosene, diesel, and gasoline when starting fires, etc. So I experienced the poof no eyebrows a couple of times myself, engulfed in large fireballs, as I learned how much kerosene it takes to light a fire. So if you had any experiences like that when you're a kid, you'll appreciate this one. Just as I was assembling the ingredients for a small snack in the kitchen, the doorbell rang. My wife, Bun, went to answer it, and I heard her invite in Milt Slapshot, a neighbor who often seeks out my advice on matters pertaining to the sporting life. "Is Pat home?" I heard Milt ask. "A fellow told me he knows something about muzzleloading." Realizing Bun could never resist a straight line like that, I jumped up and headed for the living room in hopes of stifling her. "Does he ever," she said, chortling. "Why, this very minute he's out in the kitchen loading his muzzle." A wife who chortles is an irritation, but one who also regards herself as a wit is a social nuisance. I grabbed Milt by the arm and guided him toward the den before Bun could embarrass the poor fellow further with another attempt at emulating Irma Bombeck. "Stop the cackling, Milt," I told him. "It only encourages her." Once his tasteless display of mirth had subsided, Milt explained that he was building a muzzleloader and needed some technical advice from me. A mutual acquaintance, one Rhett Sweeney, had told him that I once conducted extensive scientific research on primitive firearms. That was true. In fact, it would be difficult to find firearms more primitive than those utilized in my research. "You've come to the right man," I said. "Yes, indeed. Now, the first thing I need to know is, are you building it from a kit or from scratch?" "A kit," Milt said. "Good," I said. "Building muzzleloaders from scratch is a risky business, particularly when you work your way up to a sewer pipe too soon. Now, the first thing..." "Sewer pipe?" Milt asked. "What do you mean, sewer pipe? Are you sure you know something about black powder?" "Ha," I replied. "Do you see my eyebrows?" "No." "Well, that should answer your question. All of us experts on black powder have bald eyes. Actually, I do have eyebrows, but they are pale, sickly fellows, never having recovered from the shock of instant immolation 30 years ago. Having my eyebrows catch fire ranks as one of the more interesting experiences of my life, although I must say I didn't enjoy it much at the time. Indeed, my somewhat faulty eyesight may be a direct result of having my eyebrows go up in smoke. Either it was that or the splash of Orange Crush soda pop with which my sidekick, Rhett Sweeney, ever quick to compound a catastrophe, doused the flames. As I explained to Milt, who had settled into a chair in the den and was attempting with some success to conceal his fascination, most of my early research into the mysteries of black powder took place during the year I was 14. Some of those experiments produced spectacular results, particularly the last one, which enabled Rhett and me to attend the annual Halloween party as twin cinders. The first experiment, in which my eyebrows were sacrificed to the cause of science, consisted of placing a small pile of black powder on a bicycle seat and touching a lighted match to it. I can no longer recall why a bicycle seat was employed as part of the apparatus, but I am sure my co-researcher and I had sound reasons for it at the time. In any case, we proved conclusively that a match serves as an excellent catalyst on gunpowder. I later concluded that the experiment might have been improved upon in only two ways: to have placed the powder on Wretch's bicycle seat and to have let him hold the match. Instead, he chose to stand in awe of the experiment about 10 feet away, sucking absent-mindedly on a bottle of Orange Crush. On the other hand, my sacrifice was not without its reward, since bald eyes and a hole burnt in my bicycle seat made great conversation openers with girls at school. The success of the experiment had to be withheld from the rest of the scientific community for our fear of our parents would find out about it. Unfortunately, my mother inadvertently discovered the secret. "Is anything the matter?" Mom asked during my supper the evening after the bicycle seat experiment. "No," I replied casually. "Why do you ask?" "Oh, nothing in particular," she said. "It just seems a little odd. You're wearing sunglasses and a cap at the dinner table." She then expressed her desire that I remove both cap and glasses instantly, sooner if possible. After some debate over the finer points of dinner table propriety, I complied. As expected, Mom responded with the classic question favored by the parents of young black powder experimenters everywhere: "What happened to your eyebrows?" looking surprised and fingering the scorched area above my eyes, I tried to convey the impression that it was news to me that my eyebrows were missing, as if they might have dropped off unnoticed or been mislaid at school. The truth was soon extracted from me with an efficiency that would have been the envy of medieval counterintelligence agents. This was followed by a bit of parental advice, but scarcely had this parental advice ceased reverberating among the rafters than I was already plotting my next experiments for unlocking the mysteries of black powder. The discovery by Wretch and me that we could purchase black powder in bulk from a local dealer was to have great impact on our lives, not to mention various parts of our anatomies. The dealer in question was the proprietor of Grogan's War Surplus Hardware and Gun Emporium, none other than the old retrobate Henry P. Grogan himself. We weren't all that sure Grogan would sell a couple of scruffy, goof-off kids something as potentially dangerous as black powder. Our first attempts at making a purchase was, therefore, cloaked in subtlety and subterfuge. "Howdy, Mr. Grogan," we opened with, both of us so casual we were fit to burst. "Howdy, boys. What can I do for you? Assuming, of course, you got cash in your pockets and ain't just here to finger the merchandise." "Oh, we got cash," I said. "Wretch, why don't you read Mr. Grogan our list?" "Okay. Here goes. One GI mess kit, one helmet liner, a parachute harness, a pound of black powder, and let's see now. Do you have any of those neat camouflage jackets left?" To our chagrin, a look of concern came into Grogan's eyes. "Gosh, boys, I don't know if I should. It just doesn't seem right to sell you two young fellows. What the heck? Elmer Peabody wanted me to save those last two camouflage jackets for him, but I'll let you have them. Now, how much gunpowder was that you wanted? A pound?" In all fairness to Grogan, I must admit that he did warn us that severe bodily harm could result from improper use of the black powder. His exact words, if I remember correctly, were, "You boys set off any of that stuff near my store and I'll peel your hides." The black powder we bought from Grogan had been compressed by the manufacturer into shiny black pellets, a form intended, I believe, to make it less volatile. Even before mashing them into powder, we found it was possible to touch off the pellets if they were first piled on a bicycle seat and a match held to them. The pellets did not ignite immediately, even then, apparently for the purpose of tricking the person holding the match to take a closer look at what was occurring on the bicycle seat. Then, poof, no eyebrows. Our first muzzleloaders were small and crude, but as our technological skill and knowledge increased, they became gradually large and crude. We never did develop a satisfactory triggering mechanism. On the average shot, you could eat a sandwich between the time the trigger was pulled and the gun discharged. A typical muzzleloader test would go something like this. "Wretch. Okay, I'm going to squeeze the trigger now. There." Muzzleloader. "Snick. Pop. Me. Good. It looks like it's working. Better start aiming at the tin can." Muzzleloader. "Wretch. Say, give me a bit of that sandwich, will you?" Me. "Sure." Muzzleloader. "But. Put." "Wretch. What time is it?" Me. "About time for me to." Muzzleloader. "Poot." Wretch, enveloped in a cloud of smoke. "How was my aim?" Me. "I think it was pretty good, but the muzzle velocity leaves something to be desired. As soon as the smoke clears, reach over and pick up the ball and we'll load her up again." Even as we increased the range of our muzzleloaders, the delay in the firing mechanism discouraged us from using them on game. If we had used one of them for rabbit hunting, say, we would have had to have squeezed the trigger and then hoped that a rabbit would happen to be running by when the gun discharged. Squeezing the trigger before your game appears over the far horizon is the ultimate in leading a moving target. Since we had up to 3 minutes of lead time on stationary targets, hunting with our muzzleloader seemed somewhat impractical. There was also the probable embarrassment of having our shots bounce off the game. It didn't seem worth the risk. A hunter could only stand so much humiliation. Our first muzzleloader was a small caliber Derringer, the ammunition for which consisted of dried peas. This prompted Wretch to remark derisively to a tin can, "All right, Ringo, drop your iron or I'll fill you full of dried peas." "Okay, I said. I get your drift. will move up to hard stuff, marbles, ball bearings, golf balls. It was a mistake, though, and I knew it. Once you start escalating, there's no stopping until you achieve the ultimate weapon. Within a couple of months, we were turning out muzzleloaders in the 80 caliber range. Then we got into the large caliber stuff. Finally, we decided the time had come to stop monkeying around with black powder pistols and rifles. We'd had some close calls. We had reached a point where there was some doubt in our minds whether we might be firing a muzzleloader or touching off a bomb. Thus, it was with considerable relief that we abandoned our clandestine manufacture of testing pistols and rifles. After all, a cannon would be much safer. You didn't have to hold it. The cannon was constructed of sewer pipe, 2x4s, baby coach wheels, inner tube bands, a clothespin, baling wire, and various other odds and ends, all of which blending into a single symmetrical unit, near perfection on the scale of beauty. A croquet ball was commandeered from the Sweeney backyard for use as shot. In our enthusiasm of the moment, it was thought the croquet ball could be returned to the set after it was recovered from the firing range. Alas, it was not to be so. Attired in our muskrat skin hats, which we had sewn up ourselves, we mounted our bicycles and, with cannon in tow, set off for the local golf course, where this fairway would serve as a firing range, a putting green as a target. As we had hoped, the golf course turned out to be deserted. We quickly wheeled the cannon into firing position and began the loading procedure. "Think that's enough powder?" Retch asked. "Better dump in some more," I advised. "That croquet ball is pretty heavy." "And there's some for good measure," Retch said. The croquet ball fit a little too tightly, but we managed to ram it down the barrel. Then we both took up the positions alongside the cannon to witness the rare and wonderful spectacle of a sewer pipe firing a croquet ball down a golf course fairway. "Ready, aim, fire," I commanded. Retch tripped the firing mechanism. Eventually, the thunder was replaced by clanging bells inside our heads. The shattered pieces of earth and sky fell back into place, and the wobbly world righted itself. Retch and I limped over to the side of a utility shed, sat down to relax a bit and collect our senses. Presently, a deputy sheriff drove up. He stood for a moment, gazing at the haze of smoke wafting gently over the golf course. The patch of smoldering turf ringed by fragments of sewer pipe, baby coach wheels, and pieces of 2x4. Then, hoisting up his gun belt, he sauntered over to us. "You boys know anything about an explosion out this way?" he said. He asked. "What kind of explosion?" Retched asked. "A big explosion." I was still so stunned I couldn't even think up a good lie. Anyway, I knew the deputy had us cold. "Now, what I want to know," the deputy went on, "is why you two boys are sitting out here behind the shed smoking." "Shucks," I said, "if you'd been here a little earlier, you'd have seen us while we were still on fire." I thought for sure he was going to haul us off to jail, but instead he just smiled, took one last look at the smoldering debris, and started to saunter back to his car. "Well, if you fellows turn up any information about the explosion," he said over his shoulder, "I'd appreciate it if you'd let me know. I don't reckon there'll be another one, do you?" "Nope," Retch and I said in unison. Then the deputy stopped and kicked gingerly at something on the ground in front of him. It was Retch's muskrat hat. The deputy turned around, gave us a sympathetic look. "Too bad about your dog." The cannon pretty well quelled our enthusiasm for building our own muzzleloaders from scratch. Not only had it made a big impression, it had made quite numerous small impressions. Years later, while I was undergoing a physical examination, the doctor commented about some bumps under my skin. "Pay them no mind," I told him. "They're just pieces of sewer pipe." At this juncture of my resuscitation, Milt Slapshot jumped up and headed for the door. "Thanks," he said. "You've answered my question." "Gee," I said, "I've even forgotten what the question was. But if you need any help putting your muzzleloader kit together, Milt, just give me a call." "He hasn't called yet. I suppose he's been tied up at the office a lot lately." Well, that's a very lightly edited version of how it normally sounds when I read one of these stories. So I figured I'd kind of give you guys a little bit more of a raw, uncut version of how the readings normally go. And this was how I would make my family suffer through when I'd read them Patrick McManus stories. But I hope you guys got as big of a kick out of it as I did. I gotta say, I've been getting a ton of feedback, and every time when I first told my wife I was going to read, these chapters, Patrick McManus chapter, she thought I was an idiot, and she didn't hesitate to tell me. So whenever I get an email or a text or a message on Instagram or Facebook, I always make sure to read it to her. And finally, now she's gotten so disgusted at hearing all the positive feedback there that as soon as I start, and as soon as she hears the word Patrick McManus, she turns her back and walks away. So I appreciate you guys suffering through this one, and I hope you enjoyed it. All right, look forward to the next one.
If you've enjoyed listening to the Western Bowhunter podcast, please subscribe to the show so that you will automatically be notified when new episodes are posted up. Please take the time to give us a review on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. This will help us in the podcast rankings and will help us grow. If you have a topic you'd like to hear about or a guest that you'd like to hear from in a future episode, email south@stalkerstickbows.com with podcast in the subject line. Many years have passed me by. I come down.